Today's episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast is brought to you by...
There's just one place to go for all your spatula needs.
Spatula City!
Spatula City! A giant warehouse of spatulas for every occasion. Thousands to choose from in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can sell all our spatulas factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to buy name brand spatulas at a fraction of retail cost?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
Hello, this is Cy Greenbloom, president of Spatula City. I like their spatulas so much, I bought the company.
Spatula City, 7 locations. We're in the yellow pages under spatulas.
Spatula City, we sell spatulas. And that's all.
Nick, 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 Nick.
Nickelodeon.
From Nickelodeon Studios in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hi, I'm your host, Hector Navarro. Welcome to the podcast. Our guest today needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. Weird Al Yankovic is nothing short of a musical genius who's been releasing pop hit parodies for over 30 years. Plus, he's been a staple of the animation industry ever since 1986's Transformers the Movie featured the hit single Dare to Be Stupid. Since then, he's appeared on The Simpsons, Robot Chicken, Yo Gabba Gabba, Adventure Time, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, Gravity Falls, BoJack Horseman, Wally Kazam, Pig-Go Banana Cricket, and can now be heard as the lead character in Milo Murphy's Law. I guess being white and nerdy has worked out pretty well for Weird Al Yankovic.
Everybody shut up! Okay, now here's the deal. I'll try to educate you. Gonna familiarize you with the nomenclature. You learn the definitions of nouns and prepositions. Literacy's your mission. And that's why I think it's a good time.
Did you love cartoons and animation when you were a kid? What kind of stuff did you love?
Oh, gosh, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think what was on the. I don't have really strong memories of the very first shows I ever watched. I mean, whatever was on the big three networks, you know, back in the mid '60s. I mean, I was born in 1959, so I would have been watching, you know, all the shows that were around that time. I loved all the old Warner Brothers cartoons, which were even before that time, but which were getting, you know, replayed constantly, of course, on the networks. I always was sort of obsessed with animation ever since I was a young child.
What would your kid self think of you now?
My kid self would be pretty impressed, I think. I mean, I never in a million years thought that I would have a job anywhere related to show business. I was always a very adult-minded kid, very realistic.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean, I was a straight-A student. I started high school when I was 12. I graduated at 16 as the valedictorian. I was, you know, when I write a song like White and Nerdy, that comes from personal experience. but I always just thought that, you know, when I was 12 years old, I had a guidance counselor talk to me about what I wanted to be when I grew up, and we decided that I would be an architect.
Really?
So I went to college and I got my degree. Went to 4 years, got the degree, and then decided this isn't what I'm really passionate about. You know, I love comedy. I love music. You know, I don't know that I can make a living doing that, but, you know, I'm young. You know, I'm like 20 years old at that point.
Yeah.
I think
you know, had a head start. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and luckily things worked out because, you know, I don't know, I honestly don't know what I'd be doing right now, you know, if that record deal hadn't come through.
Yeah. Was it a gradual thing for you, like during college, or was there one specific moment where you went, I don't know if I can do this. I can't try this right now.
I think it was my third year in architecture school. I was pulling an all-nighter trying to get a project done. And I was on the third floor of my architecture labs and thinking, I wonder if I should jump. At that point, I thought, maybe I shouldn't be an architect.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it was a good idea to take a break from that, at least. What was it about? So it was just a high school guidance counselor. Was there anything about architecture that you were drawn to? Any aspects of it?
Well, I had a drafting class that I really enjoyed. I had a really great teacher, and I was very excited about that. And I was really good at math, and I had some aptitude for design. Mm-hmm. And if I thought about that all together, it's like, well, that could be an architect. Sure, why not? So it was just sort of a decision that felt reasonable.
Yes.
But when I was in college, especially my third and fourth years, I realized that I didn't have the passion that everybody else did, because people in the labs would get really excited about the positive and the negative space and the flow and the form and the function. I'm like, yeah, whatever, it's a house, you know.
You can be a coffee achiever. You can sit around the house and watch Leave It to Beaver. The future's up to you, so what you gonna do? Dare to be stupid, dare to be stupid.
What is your creative
creative process like? Do you have a little notebook right next to your bed? I used to.
I mean, I used to have a three-ring binder like I had in high school with a little plastic dividers for every song title.
Oh, yes.
It was so nerdy, so nerdy. And I think I still have all those somewhere in another box in a storage facility somewhere.
Oh, my gosh.
And now everything's done on my laptop. But, yeah, it used to be just like all handwritten notes on the lined three-hold punch paper.
That's amazing. Do you have a study in your house? Do you have like a thinking place, or you just kind of do your day and then go, well, if I get hit with something in the middle of the night, I'll get hit with something?
You never know where the idea is going to strike. So I might be in bed and, mm-hmm. you know, or I might be downstairs. I've got a little, it's not a studio per se. It's like a laptop and a keyboard, but it's like where a room in my house where I would do my demos. So
cool.
Do a lot of my work down there, but there's no telling where some stupid idea is going to strike.
What kind of things inspire you to be creative?
It's hard to say. I mean, most of my ideas, oddly enough, I get in the middle of the night. I think maybe my brain waves are undulating in some specific pattern that make them more creative at that point. I don't know. Maybe it's the phone's not ringing. They're, you know, my Twitter feed is slowed down. My family is asleep. I don't know what it is. But I find that most of my best and or more bizarre ideas come at like 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
Do you bounce any of those ideas off of anybody, or do you have a testing ground before you go, yep, I'm going to write this song, I'm going to work on this project, I'm going to do this thing?
Whoever's close. I mean, if my wife is in the room, I might throw something at her and see if she thinks it's amusing.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't, I go, well, what do you know?
Yeah. I'm Weird Al. I've been doing this for 30 years.
I'm the pro here.
You better listen, better do what you're told. You haven't even touched your tuna casserole.
Ooh.
You better chow down or it's going to get cold. So eat it. I don't care if you're full. Just eat it. Eat it.
I know people usually ask you about the negative stuff for your career, like which musical artist, you know, had a problem or a beef or any of that kind of thing. But I want to ask you, was there any surprisingly positive receptions to any musical artist hearing that you wanted to do a parody? Was there anyone you went, oh, I didn't know that they would be this on board with this?
Sure. Well, a number, though. And thank you for asking about
yes,
the positive stuff.
Yes.
Well, certainly Michael Jackson the first time. We had no idea because at that point in my career, I was a pretty much unknown, entity. And the fact that Michael Jackson would even acknowledge me, I thought, would be insane, but he approved Eat It. There's a contract with my signature next to his saying that we are the co-writers of that song. So that was a huge surprise. And there have been a number since then. I mean, Don McLean was one of those things where people said, there's no way he's going to let you do American Pie. That's sacred. He never lets anybody mess with that.
Yeah.
And he did.
That is so cool. That's great. I love the story of course, Kurt Cobain being so excited and Nirvana being so excited that they were going to get parodied. A little bit after that happened, it was this known thing of, you haven't made it in music until Weird Al, you know. And as a kid, I'm like, that is so cool.
That was sort of the tipping point. I've been going through a lot of old memorabilia the last month and looking through a lot of like reviews and articles in the 80s and early 90s. And a lot of them were pretty unkind. and it's sort of like, it was after Nirvana, then people were sort of like, okay, well, maybe there is something to this. Maybe it is like an homage. Maybe it's, that was the point where artists were sort of like, oh, well, you know, I've got my platinum album, my Grammy, but I don't have my Weird Al parody yet, you know?
What has it been like for you to see that young people might get into music, different types of music, because of that entry level, hey, here's a Weird Al album, check this out?
Well, I was just talking to somebody on the podcast crew mentioning that it was because of me that he discovered Nirvana, and that led him to other acts as well.
Get out of here.
Yeah, so I mean, so that always feels great to be sort of a gateway to a lot of other kinds of music, to expose people to music and genres that they might not have heard otherwise.
Yeah.
So a lot of people look at my albums as sort of like time capsules of that era of pop culture. So it's sort of like the cliff notes to pop music. Yeah.
What was the first VO that you did? It wasn't Transformers the movie, because Dare to Be Stupid was featured in that.
Right.
Was that your first foray into animation?
Trying to think, that was 85. I think I probably did a few things in 1984 when I first started. I'm trying to think. I remember, you remember when they used to have primetime specials on Friday before like the new season of animated shows came out on the networks?
Yeah.
And I think I did that in 1984. It was me and a Scooby and Scrappy Doo at, where was that? At Knott's Berry Farm, I think.
No way.
Going around. It's like a whole like Weird Al introduces the new Saturday morning shows.
Yeah.
I didn't do a lot of voiceover work early on in the days?
Until later,
That
Scooby thing, was that you live action or was that you like in animated
form? No, it was all live action. In fact, it was like, you know, the walk around characters in the park, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
And then they had the actual voiceovers do the voices after the fact.
You got asked to voice a Transformer. What was that experience like?
That was a lot of fun. I mean, that was, I think, in direct response to the fact that they used Dare to be Stupid in the original Transformers animated movie, which and that came about just pretty randomly. My record label at the time, Scotty Brothers, was in charge of the Transformers soundtrack. And because I was on their label, they just said, I don't even know if it was a question. You're like, we're gonna put your song on the soundtrack. I'm like, okay.
That's great.
To the people like, well, how did you decide to write Dirty Be Stupid for the Transformers movie? Like, well, that wasn't really the way it went down.
Yeah. That's awesome. Did you plan on becoming a voice actor? And a lot of the times voicing yourself or voicing different characters? Is that something that when you were young that you wanted to someday try out and do, or did you just sort of fall into it?
I don't think it was something that I was consciously thinking about, but I always thought it was a really cool gig. I mean, it's one of those kind of things that people wish they could do, but it's there's not that many people that do it. It's a hard way to get into it.
Yeah.
And I figured if I had a 30-year career in comedy music, maybe people would ask me to do voiceover work.
Absolutely, yeah. You've played yourself on The Simpsons more than one time.
That's
which
right.
Which is a really unique and cool thing.
Very small club of people.
Very small club. How did that come about? How did you get contacted by the producers of The Simpsons, or how did it happen?
I did. Matt Warburton wrote me into the first episode that I was on, and then Matt Selman on the second. I'd been friendly with the Simpsons people for a long time. I knew a lot of the writers and the producers and things like that over the years. But it wasn't until the 14th season that they wrote me into the show. I just always been a big fan, and I think they probably were aware of that. And for whatever reason, they put me in the show, and that to this day, that's one of the biggest thrills of my life. I think that's my one real shot at immortality, because The Simpsons will be in syndication for the next 30,000 years.
You were on Yo Gabba Gabba. What was that experience like?
That was so great. I love working with all those people. Christian and the gang are just the best. What a fun set. I mean, during lunchtime, they would have like costume contests and things like that. Everybody was so sweet. My daughter came to the set and they gifted her with a handmade puppet.
Oh,
you
cool.
know, it just, the whole experience was just super entertaining and fun, and couldn't have been better.
Right now, I don't really have any acts for the circus, but I'm marching around looking for circus performers to help.
Well, Mr. Ringmaster, we could learn to be circus performers.
Really?
Yeah!
You could help me?
Yeah!
You want to perform in the circus?
Yeah!
Wow! That'd be so great!
I'm just looking over your very impressive just voiceover resume, Weird Al, just the voiceover aspect, but you played yourself on Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Yes.
And I thought about this for a second. I'm like, how many of our real world celebrities and musicians and artists exist also in the same world that Batman existed? Like, how many other celebrities are celebrities to Batman?
I'm canon now.
You're canon. Exactly. Exactly. That was really cool. And the perfectly titled episode, Batmite Presents Batman's Strangest Cases, that was a blast. That was a really great episode.
Yeah, me, Batman, and the Scooby-Doo gang, and Paul Rubens was Batmite, which though I was in the same episode as well. Yeah.
That's right. That's amazing. Yeah. You were also on Adventure Time. That's a huge, super popular show as Banana Man.
Yes, I'm very honored that Pendleton and the gang invited me onto the show. I did a few songs in the show, which I didn't write. I was given the demo tape and I learned the songs.
What's that like too? How often does that happen where people want you to come on and they give you an already written song, or are there cases where it's like, we would love for you to do so? How does that work?
Usually they give me the song. Like for The Simpsons, I mean, that was, everything was written out. I don't think, and for Milo Murphy, there's a lot of music in that, which again is written by, you know, Dan and Swampy and the guys. Mm-hmm. Generally, I don't get involved in writing the songs in the show unless they ask. You know, if it was something really horrible, I'd probably make a few suggestions. But, you know, the stuff I'm offered is all really well written and fun, and there's no need to do that.
That's great. Let's talk about Milo Murphy for a second. You are the lead voiced character, Milo Murphy, in Milo Murphy's Law.
Yes.
It's on Disney XD. What can you tell us about this show? What has it been like to voice this character?
It's been amazing. It's my first, lead part in an animated show, an actual job, you know? And it's been a real thrill. I mean, I've always been a big Phineas and Ferb fan. It's a real honor and for me to work with Dan and Swampy. It's a show that I hope that we're going to be doing for a long time.
Yeah.
I love the character of Milo. It's sort of an extension of my own character, which Dan tells me is one of the reasons why they cast me, because they're looking for some, like, you know, really optimistic character. And they said, well, you know, Al was the first guy that we auditioned that didn't feel like he was putting it on. It felt pretty natural.
What is it like for you as an actor, as a performer, to do voiceover compared to live action acting, compared to appearing on camera? What are some of the benefits and drawbacks of that?
Doing voiceover work is one of my favorite things. Like, I don't think I've ever finished a session and said, oh, thank goodness that's over. So, like, are we done already? We can't do this some more. I really enjoy it and get a thrill out of it, and I like, you know, on camera acting as well. But there's so many more things to be concerned with when you're on camera. You have to know your lines. Mm-hmm. You have to you know, make sure that there's nothing hanging out of your nose.
Right.
I mean, there's all sorts of things you need to be concerned about. But when you're voice acting, it's just one thing. You just need to make sure that whatever's coming out of your mouth, you know, is appropriate.
Tell me why I need another pet rock. Tell me why I got that alpha alarm clock. Tell me why I bid on Shatner's old.
Are you a comic book fan?
Yeah. I'm not obsessed, but I like comic books. I think the one comic book I've always been obsessed with is Mad Magazine. That was something since I was 12 years old, which, you know,
makes sense. That makes sense, Al.
Yeah, when I was given the opportunity to edit Mad Magazine, that was a big deal for me because, I mean, you know, it used to really be the focus of my life. When I was 12, 13 years old, this was before the internet. So if I wanted back issues, I had to have my parents drive me around to old, you know, used magazine shops and things like that and try to go through the back stacks. And, you know, Mad Magazine in a large way, I think, helped shape my sense of humor.
Yeah.
So, in fact, you know, being on the cover of Mad is maybe the one thing that would impress the 12-year-old me the most.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You also voiced Superman in the Mad animated thing. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That was the 100th episode. So I got to do Superman and I think Krang and the manager for One Direction. I think that's right.
All the same character. Superman was the manager of One Direction, which is great. I want to ask, too, you were on WALL-E Kazam. You played a character named Wizard Jeff, which is a really adorable show. It's so great.
The song
was called Underpants.
Yes.
Underpants. Yeah, that was great. What was that like recording that song? And
I've always wanted to write record a song about underpants, and I'm glad that I was given the opportunity.
You also did a character named Mr. Dingling on Pig, Goat, Banana Cricket,
yes.
Which I don't think it hasn't aired yet.
It has not aired
yet.
I'm excited about that.
What can you tell us about Mr. Dingling?
Oh, my goodness.
Never thought I'd ask that question.
The backstory, the subtext, he's a very deep, layered character. I don't know if I could even really describe all the layers of Mr. Dingling.
Absolutely.
We don't have enough time.
I'm not
even going to bother.
But I appreciate you saying that up front. That's just some great honesty, Al. That's really great. You were on BoJack Horseman.
Yes.
Hugely popular show. How fun was it to play that character?
It was really fun.
Captain Peanut Butter.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Peanut Butter's brother.
Yeah.
I think I probably got that job by being proactive about it because I binge-watched the first two seasons of BoJack Horseman, and I loved it. And I'm friends with Aaron Paul, and I just emailed him and said, hey, man, I just watched the show. I'm sorry I'm late to the party, but I just watched the whole thing, and it's amazing. And, you know, I'm just really thrilled. Thank you for doing the show. And he goes, like, we should put you on the show. And I was like, yeah.
Friends, or that's what you'll find in place of a treat at the end of the line. And I don't think you want that.
Some of my favorite music videos of yours deal with animation or completely animated. I love Party in the CIA. I love Poker Face.
That was sort of inspired by the Anna Jams that Marv Newland and people used to do back in the day, the Rocket Ship Limited stuff, where he would just invite like, you know, a dozen of his friends to do a bit, and they would have the first frame and the last frame of animation, and you could do anything between those frames, and then he'd put them all together. And I thought, oh, this is amazing.
Very cool.
So I wanted to do something like that for Polka Face, whereas like we would farm out every single song in the medley to a different animator, and whatever, anything they wanted to do. I didn't want to micromanage it. So here, this is the song, whatever you want to do. And then they put them, you know, send them back, and we just edited them all together, and that was it. And that was an amazing thing, yeah.
What was the reaction like from you? What was your response when you would get little pieces back? Were you like, I would have never thought of doing something like that, and that's so cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it was a surprise every single time because, like I said, I didn't tell them what to do, and it was really all their vision. So it was, you know, it was a great experience to be able to kind of let go and just say, okay, you guys, I hired you because I like what you do, so just do your thing.
I don't have to shoot this one. I don't have to film it. I don't have to do any of that. Why do you think your music and your persona, Al, and your actual real-life personality mesh so well with animation?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I don't know if there's a certain personality type that appreciates animation more than another, but I just always had a large affinity for it. That's one of the reasons why I did so many animated music videos. I think maybe at one point I did a lot of animated videos because it was more cost effective than doing live action, but that doesn't say anything. I mean, but you know, I also am obviously a huge fan of the animated medium and want to support and express my love for it.
Al, are there any songs that you think that you missed a chance to do, being on topic of being current? Do you think that there's anything that you're like, oh, I missed the boat on that? Or do you feel like, no, I could always go back and do it if I want?
Timing is important because, you know, I wouldn't, people, you should do more classic rock songs. And well, you know, I would, if I could tie it with something that's topical, in a subject matter.
Right.
Cause there's no reason to do a 40-year-old song about cheese, you know, like, you know, and there are some songs back when I was under my album deal that, you know, it had been like 2 years too late to do a song. Like, if I'd have thought of that idea 2 years ago, or if I had an idea and then it was two more years before the album came out, I was like, well, it's a little dated now. I probably shouldn't use this one, which is one of the reasons why, like, now with the whole digital thing, I'm more excited because now things will not be sitting in the can.
Yeah, exactly. Do you ever come up with ideas when you're sitting on the can for songs?
Well, 30% of them, pretty much.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. That was so weird that you mentioned that because I really wrote that question down.
Oh, good,
that's so
good.
Weird.
Stop, make it pop, DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'm a fight till we see the sunlight. Tick tock on the clock, but the polka don't stop.
No.
Yodel, old lady.
Polka face, polka face.
What has it been like for you to see musical acts inspired by what you've done? And then in turn, I feel like a lot of them regard you with such praise that if they've talked about you or met with you, it's always Weird Al's the king and everybody else is just kind of trying to do their own thing. What's your response been like?
It's been really great. I mean, I feel very fortunate that there's been sort of a renaissance in comedy music. When I started out in the 80s, I felt kind of lonely. I was all by myself. You know, and there wasn't such a thing as YouTube. I mean, you know, if you had a parody, I mean, the Dr. Demento show is sort of like your only, way in. But nowadays, I mean, there's so many wonderful, you know, and amazing acts, Lonely Island, Tenacious D, Flight of the Conchords, Garfunkel and Oates, Reggie Watts, Bo Burnham. I mean, there's so many people out there doing amazing work. And, you know, if I had any kind of influence on them at all, I'm very flattered because they're all amazing artists. And then there's a whole generation of people on YouTube. I mean, there's a million people on YouTube doing funny music and parody songs. I have to assume a lot of them probably were inspired by something I did 10 or 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you think the music industry is going?
I don't know. I'm not much of a futurist. The industry has changed dramatically in the last decade or two, and not in a good way for the people trying to make money off of it.
Right.
It's hard to say. I mean, I know that a lot of record labels now that are signing artists try to bundle things, like, because they find that they can't generally make a lot of money just off of music. Mm-hmm. They try to bundle it with touring. They try to bundle it with merchandise and other things where they can, you know, monetize their investment.
Right.
And in fact, a lot of people in the industry look at albums and music sort of a lost leader. Like, you know, we can't make money off of this, but it's a way that we can make money on this or this.
Sure.
Which is why, you know, in the 80s, you used to tour in order to sell records. And nowadays, it's more the opposite. You make records so that you have an excuse to go touring.
I'm nerdy in the extreme and whiter than sour cream. I was in AV club and glee club and even the chess team. Only question I ever thought was hard. What do I like, Kirk, or do I like Picard? Spend every weekend at the Renaissance Fair. Got my name on my underwear. They see me strolling, they laughing, and rolling their eyes because I'm so wide and nerdy.
So let's talk about your huge, massive box set that's coming out. Tell us a little bit about this thing.
Well, you know, I feel a little bit bad because, you know, it's supposed to be the complete works and I'm not dead yet. And I have a feeling that I'm probably going to be doing something else before.
Oh, you will.
You know,
you will.
For the rest of my life. So this is complete for now.
Yeah.
I mean, I put out a box set in 1994, mm-hmm. which was at that time the complete Weird Al.
Yeah.
So this is a good time to do it, though, I think, because my record contract has been fulfilled. I'm probably not going to be doing any more complete albums after this.
Oh, okay.
I've been doing a lot of thinking about that, and you know, I'm not drawing any lines in the sand, but I don't think that I'm going to wait until I have 12 songs and release them all at once, because I like to, you know, I get antsy. I like to, like, you know, I record something and I get excited about it and want people to hear it. So in the past, that was part of my deal, like, well, you have to put out so many albums.
Sure.
And now I don't have that kind of restraint. So anyway, this is the end of my album output, and I felt like, okay, well, this sounds like a reasonable time. So it's going to be all 14 of my studio albums, mm-hmm. plus a 15th disc, which is sort of a rarities compilation.
Yeah.
It's not going to be everything, obviously, but it's called, I think, in fact, we're going with the name Medium Rarities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be just odds and ends and things that weren't on the official album releases, and a few obscure things and a few things that never saw the light of day. And I can't even tell you exactly what's going to be on it yet, because we're still working with the lawyers and trying to figure out what we can clear.
That's awesome. That's exciting. In the Shape of Your Classic Accordion, is that true?
Yes. All 14, all 15 albums are going to be in the bellows of a replica
that is
of
so
my
cool.
accordion. Yeah.
That is so cool.
And it's available. You can get it either as 180-gram vinyl or digital or CD, so whatever format. No Edison cylinders on this one, but otherwise pretty much every format.
And some of the first time some of your music is going to be available on vinyl, is that correct?
That's right, yeah. My first 6 albums were on vinyl, and then they pretty much stopped doing vinyl, and then vinyl had a resurgence, so my last two or three albums were on vinyl, but there are, I think, 6 albums in the middle of that never got a vinyl release, so this will be a first vinyl release for all those.
Let's get into that a little bit about you making this decision about maybe not waiting until an entire album is available. Is that something that you feel has happened because technology has made it available? Is that something because you want to make sure that when the iron is hot, you want to strike and you want to have things to stay current? What are some of the decisions, what are some of the reasons that went into that decision?
Yeah, it's all of the above. I mean, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, it made a lot more sense because singles were a hard thing to sell and albums were the way to distribute things. But now that we live in the digital age, it's very easy to get your stuff out digitally, to sell it digitally, and to be very current and quick about it. If I have an idea. In fact, I did that several years ago. There was a T.I. parody, Whatever You Want, Whatever You Like. I can't remember. Whatever You Like, I think it was. It was 2 weeks from me getting the idea to do the song to it being on iTunes,
awesome.
The parody.
Awesome.
In fact, it came out while the T.I. Original song was still number 1 on the chart. So I got excited about that. Like, wow, well, we live in an age where I can get this stuff out, because in the past, it was sort of like, you know, it would literally be months or maybe even a year between, you know, the idea and it actually being out to the public. Because even once you record it, to manufacture the albums, to distribute them, it could be months and months down the line. And it's hard to be terribly topical and timely when you have that much of a lag time.
Yeah. Do you have any dream projects that you haven't had a chance to work on yet? Is there anything in any other kind of medium that you would like to try your hand at?
I've been given the opportunity to fail in a lot of media, and I'd like to keep trying to do that, maybe more successfully, though. Sure, I'd like to, you know, next year I'm not touring. I guess maybe this year, I don't know when this is coming out, but 2017, I'm not touring.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work on some major project, although I don't know what it is yet. It's kind of a big question mark. So I might try to write a movie script. Maybe I'll write an animated movie, maybe live action. For the last few years, I've been toying with the idea of possibly writing a musical. I might do that, you know, or some other acting gig may come up. I don't know. It's sort of, I used to be terrified when I had a big stretch of time available.
Yeah.
But but I'm at a point in my life and career where now it's sort of like, oh, I've got a bunch of time where I don't know what I'm doing. That's awesome.
I'm the pious guy, the little omelets wanna be like on my knees day and night, scoring points for the afterlife. So don't be vain and don't be whiny, or else my brother, I might have to get medieval on your hiney. We've been spending most our lives living in an Amish paradise. We're all crazy men and knights living in an Amish paradise.
I'm a big fan of the fact that you have never taken drugs, don't drink alcohol.
Not yet. Not yet. No.
We don't know. 2017, you got a lot of time.
I got a lot of time. I got a whole year off.
We're going to try some stuff out. But what I love about it is that you've talked about it before and how it's important to you, but you are also somebody who has worked in Hollywood. And I can imagine that there were times where maybe that was difficult or uncool. But I want to ask, was there any times where you thought, man, this is a really tough business. This is a really cynical industry, a really cynical town. And what
I wish
you
I had
do?
Some drugs right now.
Yeah. Oh, just to get through it. But what do you sort of hold on to stick to who you are and to what you believe in?
It's not so much of a challenge for me. I don't know. I just for me to do what I want to do and be who I am. It's never been something I've thought too much about. I just do what I do.
Yeah.
And, I don't get a lot of outside pressure for people trying to change me or make me into a different person. And if they are, then I just say no.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
That's wonderful because I don't think that is common in everybody. I think that's kind of a rare thing, that it's easy for you to be you. And I know that's why your music and your career speaks to young people so much, because young people need to hear messages like that. And it's really important to just be you, and you are the coolest the way you are, even if you're white and nerdy, even if, you know, all of that stuff.
I've been going through my old letters recently, and I've been reading a lot of wonderful mail from kids that were just inspired by the fact that I called myself Weird Al.
Yeah.
And there are some points in my life where I thought, I shouldn't have gone with such a dorky nickname, but a lot of kids are like, well, you gave me hope in my life because I've always been a weird kid and I was always a little different and people would pick on me and make fun of me, but the fact that you embraced it and you know, it was empowering for me to know that you were, you know, proud of your weirdness and you were able to make good.
Well, good. I'm glad you're aware of that, because if you weren't, Al, I was going to tell you everything you just said. But it seems like you'd already gotten tons of letters, which is great. What advice would you have to fans? Would you tell them to lean into music or to lean into comedy? What would you say?
Just, you know, go with your muse. I mean, if you want to do, you know, comedy music, you should do it. I mean, there's so many more avenues now than there were when I started out. YouTube and portals like that are a great way to do it. I mean, it's a good way for, you know, a lot of people to hear what you're doing. And if you're really good, people will notice. I guarantee you, it'll get around. Things go viral, and it's easy if you've seriously got talent and your material is seriously good, people will find out about it. Just put yourself out there.
What has it been like for you to see the fan feedback, especially after the internet became a thing, to all of your work?
It's been great. I mean, the internet has allowed people to access my work that maybe didn't have access to before. Certainly, there are many pockets of the world that would never have been able to get a Weird Al album. You know, my albums weren't racked, you know, in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
You know? But because of the internet, anybody anywhere in the world and the known universe has access to hear this stuff. And, you know, social media has been great. It's allowed people to stalk me more efficiently.
Yes.
You know?
It's a real easy way to do that. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, you know, it's not like people can figure out my tour schedule. They can, you know, plan their lives around my tour schedule if they so desire. It's just been much easier to connect with the fans, and that's always been really important with me. And it's the internet's been a remarkable tool.
Well, Al, I want to thank you so much for being as funny as you've been for over 30 years. I cannot wait to get your box set. It's going to be fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. You're the best.
Oh, no, you!
No, you're the best.
Oh, okay.
Well, that was our conversation with Weird Al Yankovic. So cool. Huge thanks to Al for coming down and telling us about his career and his life. Guys, thank you for continuing to like and share the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Be sure to go to nickanimationpodcast.com for all of the old episodes. A bunch of cool, awesome, extra behind-the-scenes stuff, including a picture of me with Weird Al. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by
Jonathan Highlander,
Dana Vasquez-Eberhardt, Kelly Smith,
Andrew Huebner.
Original music by Useful Creatures. This week's episode edited by
Josh Caldwell,
Jonathan Highlander.
All of the incredible social media for our podcast is made by
Narbe Manassians,
Sammy Armiger,
David Watson.
And thanks to the man who works at controls and makes me sound better than I have a right to,
Manny Grova.
Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons.